Okay, so I'm talking to Michael Horn, and he is the authorized American media representative for Billy Meier in North America. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Emily. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Great, thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to me today. Where I'd really like to start is we're going to be talking about Billy Meier, who is a very, very interesting UFO contactee case. How did you become involved with this initially?
Well, actually, in 1979, I simply walked into a bookstore in Los Angeles area, and I saw the first photo book of the Meier UFOs that had been put out. And in there, of course, there was also some, you know, additional information on the man and the investigation that was going on. But the photos were so compelling, and I thought, when I looked at it right away, that's authentic. It just rang that way for me. Of course, I've not rested my opinion totally on that first moment in terms of the Meier case. But that was the introduction to it, and then I bought that book, and I took it home, and I just, you know, read it, looked at it over and over, and then it was several years later that I was in a small cafe in Sedona, Arizona, and there was one other guy in there, a customer. We ended up talking, to each other, and he turned out to be not only interested in UFOs, but the Meier case in particular, and he lived in the Los Angeles area and told me that when I, you know, got back home, I should come up, and he would give me the what are called at the time the contact notes or contact reports that Meier had transcribed and published. And I didn't know at that time what it was, and he said, well, those are the conversations that he's had with these extraterrestrials over about a three-year period. And I said, wow. So came back to L.A., got those from him, and proceeded to read them for months. They were a little difficult to read because the translator kind of structured the sentences more like German, but they were enormously compelling, and I kind of put them away under the bed for a while until 2 years later I opened a newspaper and I saw a new discovery, a story about a new discovery that Lawrence Livermore Laboratories had made on the connection between A-bomb testing and the ozone damage. And I thought, as I read this article, how come I already know this? Why isn't this new to me? And then I went over, reached under the bed, and pulled out some of these, you know, volumes of the Meier material. And within a very short period of time, I found the thing I had recalled, which was that the man had been given that information, and he had published it in 1975, and refers back in those documents to 1950s, where he was first told about this connection. But the 1975, you know, information is there, which makes it 13 years prior to the time that this is announced in a newspaper, and I've already had them in my possession for 2 years, so I knew there was something going on here.
And this was information that Billy Meier had received from his extraterrestrial contacts?
Yes. They had given him, and this was only really a fraction of the information he had been given on so many different areas by these people. And what happened was that in the ensuing few years, I would find these, you know, articles being published on new discoveries about this and about that, and I was regularly going back, pulling out the material from under the bed and going, oh, it's in here already. So it was then towards the probably latter part of the 90s that I decided to search out on the Internet. I pulled out, I think, about 60 different things, and I decided to see, you know, did these things occur that Meier wrote about? What were the details, and, you know, when, if they did occur, when were they first published? And I found that in every case, the details were the same as what Meier had published, and only in one of the random 60 that I pulled out had it been published before Meier. So it means that Meier published this information prior to the events occurring, and that, as a matter of fact, I just sent an email out today to remind some people that, I don't know if you are aware that they just discovered, you know, some very basic forms of life, they're thinking, on Mars. They had discovered water there.
Yes, I saw that.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, I had put, I think it was in August that I had put out a press release. It's on my website, on the front page of my website. I'd have to go and look myself. I put out a press release after they discovered the water on Mars, and shortly after the water discovery, they discovered that there was elements in the Mars environment, in the soil, that were detrimental to life. And about 2 weeks before that, I had been rereading the Meyer material, and I came upon the Mars information from, I think it's July 8th, 1976, where he's told that your scientists will eventually discover that there is water here, but that Mars is hostile to life, and then they will discover, you know, when the equipment is good, they'll discover that there are, that they refer to it as floric and faunic life forms here, very, you know, minute, but they're here. All three of those things now have been confirmed, and that's, you know, what is it, 32 years ago, 33 years now with this discovery. So there's no question in my mind whatsoever that Meyer is genuine. I mean, none at all. I can't prove everything in the case because some of the material refers to events and histories that are way, you know, prior to anything we know about, and some of the events are still in the future.
Now, Billy Meyer himself is an intriguing man simply because he's just a very inconspicuous man who lives in Switzerland. He has one arm, which is sort of neither here nor there, but interesting point for the photo taking.
Right.
How did it come around that he was someone that was sort of selected or chosen to be contacted?
Well, I'll give you the answer as it's contained in the information, and I just want to say to you and your listeners, there's nothing to believe here. There really isn't, because there's information. Some information we can check out and some we can't. This is going to fall under the category of some we can't, because while Meyer's contact started when he was a mere 5-year-old boy, he claims that that's when his first contact started with the extraterrestrials. The real answer to your question kind of goes like this. As far as the information in this case is concerned, reincarnation is a fact of life.
Mm-hmm.
And the part of us that reincarnates is the human spirit, not the soul, which is a separate construct that each human has a soul, solar plexus, thusly named, and that's the primary kind of residence, if you will, of that energetic soul, and, you know, the psyche, parts of the consciousness. The spirit is a very, you know, a small fragment of pure universal energy, according to them, that is placed, resides deep within the brain. And it is the spirit that reincarnates in a different personality always, excuse me, time after time for millions and millions and millions of years.
Now
this is not like... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, when you say it's the spirit reincarnates with a different personality, but does it bring the memories back with it? Or maybe
good question.
Memories?
The memories are not consciously brought back. There is the new personality. There's something called the comprehensive consciousness block. The new personality starts to form, and the memories and, how to put it, the assets, the information from the previous incarnation is in a subconscious level. Plus, it is all contained in what they call the storage banks around the planet. Sometimes we call that the Akashic records or what have you. And to add to the story, while we will still complete the other part of the question, to add to the story, though, if people are buried and not cremated, this energy that contains information is bound to the bones that are buried, and it's also bound to, and the energy is called fluidal, like fluid, AL, fluidal forces, and it's also adheres to things like even walls and homes, but even more strongly to personal items such as jewelry. Certain, you know, physical substances hold this energy more. It's also the energy that's often responsible for poltergeist and ghost activity. It's not conscious in the way that we think of consciousness, which is why ghosts aren't conscious and all that. It's an energetic, it's almost like an electromagnetic plasma, and it contains information. And so when we come back into each lifetime, we are subconsciously drawing information from actually the information that may still be bound to bones of previous bodies, wherever they may be buried, and in plural, around the world, if the bones haven't decayed, and so it can go back quite some time. The information in this case on how our lives work, how the spirit functions, how these fluidal forces are connected to us, what the soul is, and tons more, is contained in the Meyer case and constitutes the spiritual teaching in the case, which is far and away in unknown information to many people. And some things have been tapped on here and there. You know, it's not all totally unknown or unique. There are different spiritual traditions that contain valid and interesting spiritual information, but the Meyer case is just way outside in terms of the scope of the information. Again, with that caveat that there's things we can't yet prove, most of us, some people may be able to, you know, have a sense of this, but to try to complete the answer on how, why, Billy, okay, so since the spirit, they say, is this eternal reincarnating aspect of each human being, these people claim that with their technology being some 8,000 years in advance of us and quite a significantly greater amount of time in advance of us spiritually, that they are able to even identify and or track the spirit and have access to information about the previous incarnations of a given person, if it's of importance. They don't go looking into people randomly. They adhere to a free will thing where people are entitled to their privacy, and as good and proper as it is, it actually prolonged the difficulties in some ways with this mission, because they weren't looking into us more deeply than they were taking a lot of things, you know, as they were presented. That's another story. However, to complete this thought on the reincarnation, it is said, therefore, that Meyer's spirit, the spirit that now animates a man named Billy Edward Albert Meyer in Switzerland, had been, in addition to many, many other less consequential incarnations, surely, had also incarnated in six previous prophets on this planet in a very specific lineage, all of whom had tutoring, mentoring, contact with extraterrestrial gods, if you will, in the past, and who all actually basically have and have had the same exact mission, but it was never fulfilled fully because due to the human beings, what they were, and the technologies available and other factors, in each case the teachings of these prophets were either falsified, cultified, or turned into, you know, made into parts of religions, but always altered and, you know, denatured in some very, very critical ways. So this time, in our electronic age, when this final prophet, the seventh prophet in this series, is said to, you know, then come forward, he brings again these eternal spiritual teachings to humanity at a time when they can be preserved in an unaltered form and tracked in an unaltered form for some time to come as we evolve in our world, which is going to take centuries, unfortunately, as we leave behind religions and belief systems and politics and all the things that tie us in stupid, wasteful knots. And his work as a prophet will be done, and the remaining incarnations in this human cycle will be as, you know, other people, but there won't be another prophet necessary for this world.
Mm.
That's what's said.
Right. So then the contactee, or the beings who have contacted Billy, really have come with a very, very benign mission. It's certainly not to control us or take anything from us. It's purely to try and teach and guide us.
You could say that's accurate. You know, I was just recently making a presentation in Sedona, Arizona, and somebody raised this question. Well, how do we know they're not negative entities? And I said, look, apart from the fact that it's said that these beings have had contact for thousands of years going back in our history with, you know, original prophets, just taking the fact that for over 66 years, soon to be 67 years, they've been in touch with this one man. Go back 67 years, our weapon systems were less developed. Our ability to fend off an attack should one have been, you know, desired by these people. We are seeing people who clearly have demonstrated technologies far in excess of anything we possess, and we could assume safely that their weaponry and their ability to use it far exceeds anything. We would be relatively primitive. Had they a negative agenda, they could have at any time just in these past, let's say, 67 years, attacked us, taken control, destroyed our world, anything else, but they've taken great pains, as this man has endured great pain, literally, throughout his life, to, in an oblique manner, insert the evidence, insert the information on a free will aspect whereby it's not going to be, you know, they're not going to show themselves all over the world. They're not going to hover over the cities and land, and because that would violate the free will of billions of people. They are going to insert the stuff. They'll titillate with photographs and films and evidence that thinking people can really, you know, go through and test, and skeptics can come forth, and all the process that we have to take in the process of self-discovery and self-responsibility to determine the validity, the authenticity of this case. So when people speak about negative entities overtaking us, the real problem, apart from the fact that they have not applied any logic to this evidence that there's no malevolence here, they really seem to believe that there indeed are, quote-unquote, negative entities, and it's not to say that such don't exist, but they don't have the evidence for that.
Mm-hmm.
There actually is evidence in the Meyer case to discuss. Discusses some of the real negative entities that have been around in our history and of an extraterrestrial origin and other information. But most people, for instance, in the New Age, metaphysical, paranormal, UFO community, frankly don't have a clue as to what they're babbling about because they go on information that has no actual, testable, verifiable basis to it. And I'm speaking as someone who's for over 20 years looked into every possible thing, channeling and all the rest, and even did 12 years of New Age comedy because I found so much stuff that was, you know, fun in this journey to look at and poke fingers at. But there's too little verifiable content, and yet people proceed along the lines of speaking about things as if they knew it to be factual.
Going back a bit to Billy's history, how was, I mean, it must have been, you say at age five he started to have contacts made, but was it because he was so young that he found it very believable, or was there a point where he wondered if these people were really who they said they were?
Good question. As a matter of fact, what happened is his first contact was telepathic. He heard a voice in his head. It was a friendly, warm, elderly-sounding male voice, and he had these little, you know, telepathic messages occurring to him, and then he was kind of urged, drawn towards a certain part of the forest where there was a clearing one day, and there was his craft set down, and, you know, he started to have the voluntary face-to-face contacts, but it was still somewhat problematic and troubling to him, and so he went to the parish priest, Father Zimmerman. And interestingly enough, of course, in this case, Father Zimmerman had been prepared by the extraterrestrials because he was a kind of very forward-thinking man himself. And he, while he was a pastor in a religious, you know, kind of functioning role, he was a much more of a, you might just say, universal or cosmically a conscious man. And so the Pleiaron, and I'm sure this was all part, you know, in terms of this story, I would say it would be part of their, you know, the spirit's choices and all that stuff coming into this life to play these parts. But he was prepared for young Edward at that time to come to him with some distress about, you know, this is happening, is this okay? And because let's remember, he's, you know, young Edward Myers coming from a religious family in a religious little village and all that stuff. So the priest was ready and did counsel him successfully over time to just assure him that this was a good thing, that there was no malevolence here, he could relax his fears, but he couldn't even speak to his family about this for the longest time because it was a very private thing. And it created a lot of problems for him because they worked with him with certain technologies as well as with, you know, verbal interaction because this man could speak to him and be understood by him. But they accelerated his thinking capacity so that within a 2-year period, he already had the thinking capacity of a 35-year-old man, and he, you know, going every day to school and in and out of these very things that were belief-based and things that were, you know, he was learning very quickly a lot of stuff. So it created tons of problems for him as a young person, and even into his teen years and beyond. So he's had a life of duality with, you know, unimaginably fantastic experiences and unimaginably painful. There have been 21 attempts on his life, kidnapping attempts on his family. I mean, all sorts of stuff. So he's, you know, even the loss of his arm, he was forewarned 10 years before it happened. You're going to lose your left arm. We cannot do anything about it. You're going to have to get used to that.
Mm.
You know, but we wouldn't handle that, most of us, very well.
Now, when you say assassination attempts, who was behind that, or does he not know?
Well, they know, you know, for the most part they do know. There were various military intelligence parties from different, you know, sources, governments or private, also, you know, private groups like neo-Nazi groups. There were people who were very religiously indoctrinated who thought he must be the devil or something, you know, and all this stuff. And there also were attempts from a very negative, or two separate negative extraterrestrial groups that wanted to put an end to his work and him. Yeah.
So Billy would receive how would it work? He receives a message, a telepathic message, there's going to be a contact, and then he sees...
Yes, and sometimes it would then, it'd be a message, or it might be just a cooling sensation on his forehead that he would know where to go in advance, but he would get the message, and in effect he would either be told or know where it was that he was to go, and he would go to the appointed spot. And, you know, we're talking 1940s in Switzerland, and even though it's towards the end of the Second World War, it's still a relatively peace, you know, the nation neutrality, pastoral, beautiful, blah, blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
And he wanders freely around forests and meadows, and, you know, it's safe. So he was able to go whenever he was called, pretty much, because they knew, you know, what his availability is. He going to be in school? Is he with his family? Or is this a little free time? And they would go and meet. Sometimes he would simply sit inside this craft with this man, Svath, on the ground many times. And most of the time they would lift off the surface of the earth and just be up high above the earth, or he would take him and show him different things in our solar system or other places. And it's pretty amazing stuff. I mean, he was also taken to meet certain people who were either major players on the world stage or soon to be at the time. And Svath had been known to some of these people as an extraterrestrial human, and Meyer was introduced to them. We tell a lot of this in the film. You know, he speaks for himself in the film and talks about this. And it's an amazing, amazing story. And in the film, apart from the fact that Meyer and about 16 other people around him, including his ex-wife, were all put through the stress test lie detector and passed 100% for truthfulness, I even brought in an NLP specialist to examine Meyer's testimony and that of another witness in the case, and we have that in our film so people can see that for themselves and just, you know, take this in and understand that we're not dealing with a liar. As amazing and unimaginably, you know, mind-blowing as it is, this man is telling the truth.
Now, the film you mention is The Silent Revolution of Truth, which you wrote and produced.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I just want to get back to there is you mentioned that he was taken to meet leaders and so on. So are there other people that these beings are in contact with?
I think what we could say, they had contacted Father Zimmerman. This man, Svath, apparently had some interaction. These are human beings, so, you know, it wasn't like little gray guys, but he had some interaction apparently with some people that we could, you know, probably call contacts. And I don't know how extensive. Meyer didn't go into what the nature of those things were, but that apparently Svath had interacted with these people. They knew he was an extraterrestrial, and that Meyer was introduced to them for certain reasons and spoke with them, and that's, you know, that's all that we got from him for the movie. I could always probably ask him more about it when I see him again, but I don't know how much more there is to it than that.
Now, the beings that you're talking about, they are what we know as the Pleiades, is that right? The group?
Well, yeah, I mean, this name, the Pleiadians was used, and it was really a screen name because there is no life in the Pleiades that we see from in our night sky.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that what they said is they live in a slightly altered time-space configuration, about 80 light years beyond the Pleiades. And they call their system what would translate to us Pleiades. It's Plejares, P-L-E-J-A-R-E-S, or Plejares. And they use the term Pleiadian because, as they told Meyer when they started to use that term, because he knew that wasn't their name, and he said, why would you want me to call you that? And they said, because after your material starts to get published, after you start disseminating your material, it'll go to a worldwide level slowly but surely, and then people are going to pop up that are going to claim to be channeling Pleiadians, meeting with Pleiadians, having Pleiadian boyfriends and girlfriends and all the rest of the nonsense, and they will thereby identify themselves as liars and frauds by using a term that we don't use, and in addition to that, we have no contact with any of these people, none of them. So that was a little mechanism, and then they told him, I think it was like in 1998, you can now just, you know, reveal that, and because, you know, they've removed themselves from the planet, and their mission here, whatever, you know, it fully comprised of is completed, though they still maintain their contacts with him, and they still, you know, they publish information about, you know, those contacts in transcript form.
So they are they still physically visiting Billy, or they just...
Yeah.
So they are still coming back. Now, when he met them, he describes, what do they look like? I mean, do they have a human form?
They are human beings, yeah. They are literally human beings. The universe is teeming with human life, teeming with countless numbers of human races of all sorts of sizes and shapes, but human, 343 skin colors that they know of. This original universe, the number of human races that were in this original creation, there were the beginnings of 42 million plus human races in our universe. They're now billions, and we have no concept really about this. Now, as I said, the human beings come in many sizes, shapes, and forms, and colors, and some would be strange to us, and vice versa. And some would not. The Plejaran people also are ancestrally connected to us in some ways, to some of the people on the planet, simply because their own distant forefathers colonized here. They were the gods at times of our distant past. They helped to screw things up, you know. And they're fully human. They simply are a much more advanced race. Their vibration, you know, is much finer than ours, though they're physical. They're not light beings. There are semi-material, semi-spiritual light being types in the Andromeda galaxy that they also take advice from. But they are still a very physical race, and, I mean, they can dematerialize and beam up and out, and they, you know, travel through space and time and all that, but physical bodies are the nature of physical reality, and all of the talk that floats around the New Age about ascension and we're going to the fourth dimension and our light bodies, this is really warmed over Christianity, which is a lot of what the New Age has absorbed with mixtures of, you know, Egyptian mysticism and other things tossed in. And people think it's real, and there's zero evidence for it. We're not going into our light bodies, you know, in this lifetime or in about a million lifetimes from now. We still won't be there. It's a very, 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 very long evolutionary process, but that isn't known or understood in the areas in which they, you know, promote these other ideas.
Now, are these people closer to that state? You've mentioned that they can go in and out of states, but they still have a physical body.
Yes, indeed. Oh, yeah. They still have physical bodies. They still have, you know, physical lives. Their lifespans are, you know, 10 to 15 times longer than ours or more, but and eventually we'll regain those. We'll have that, but it's going to take steps and time before we do. But the fact that they have mastered levels of science that we're on the very beginning steps of some of this, and our scientists know. I mean, this, first of all, there are parts of higher levels of government intelligence and military science. They know the Meyer case is real, and the information of the case may have even helped us not get into a third world war so far, because the U.S. was planning on, in 2006, when the elections, the Republicans, had they won, they would have launched a third world war and attacked Iran and all of that. The material in the Meyer case has been warning against those types of things for some time, because there are very ancient prophecies connected, and if the U.S. does certain things, it's already done enough that we're going to have enormous trouble here. There's no doubt about that, and other places in the world, too. We're not the only ones, but if we had done that attack at that time, Russia and China would have attacked us. It would have been over here.
So basically there are prophecies, and if certain paths are gone along, those prophecies will come true. If the path is deviated from, then we can avoid that outcome?
Right, that's correct. That's the difference between the prophecies and predictions. Predictions are written in stone. They're things that will occur with certainty, and they oftentimes are more cosmic events, meaning things that are well outside the control of human beings, having to do with movements of asteroids or planets or nature's, you know. But some things are predictions because they've gone past the point of no return, and or they have been set in motion by human beings and are, you know, are going to produce unalterable results. So the fact that there are warnings, prophetic warnings, means this is still changeable. If you people would just wake the heck up, slap yourselves a little bit, and see what you're doing and allowing to be done to yourselves and your planet before you get such magnitude of lesson that you will not have any concept of what's happened to you. And some of that is going to occur. We have simply gone too far in some ways. They won't say now anymore about specific events. They simply said, there is an article up on my website called A Prediction on the front page, and Meyer does describe stuff that's coming without dates and times and specifics, because these are things that we've been warned about for decades, if not centuries, millennium in many ways, that we have to take responsibility for what's going on. And you know, we're so wrapped up with the dead-end game of politics and delusional religions that have long since, for any rational person, shown that they're not based in reality. But, you know, people are slow learners. We want to cling to beliefs. We want to play the game because we think that that's what establishes reality. Cause and effect determines how these things come out. And if we're going to set certain things in motion, send the pendulum out, if it's going to come back, it may be coming back as a wrecking ball that says return to sender, and we're unaware of how that works.
You mentioned that the, and your website for anyone listening who wants to check it out is theyfly.com, is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that they, that the, these beings have sometimes helped to alter the course. So have they literally physically come in and prevented catastrophes, or have they guided us in a certain way?
Yeah, the only things that I think that they have done, based on what I read back in the 80s, and I've looked at maybe only once or twice since then, they did prevent the testing of at least one device and perhaps more, military, you know, missile-type testing. There was a bomb that some scientists had cobbled together, and I think they didn't say where it came from, but I think it's almost safe to assume it was U.S., and it was a chain reaction bomb they wanted to test. Had it been tested, our atmosphere around the planet would have been ignited, and within 8 minutes, the planet would have been turned into a cinder. Nothing would have existed here. It would have just burned up this entire thing, and they knew that, and they prevented that. And it may have even had even greater consequences should that chain reaction extend beyond the planet and start igniting things through the solar system. So they prevented that, and it's possible that they also removed the memory of how to create that. I'm not sure, because they have the ability to. So they may have also altered, you know, another test here or there, where maybe something that would have been, you know, catastrophic that they were allowed to alter was, you know, interfered with. Basically, we can do the Third World War if we want. We can do all the craziness. They won't interfere with that. They're not going to stop it. The only thing that they would interfere with would be actions that would result in the literal blowing apart of the planet, because that could create consequences cosmically throughout space that are, you know, we're not entitled to just, you know, if we want to kill ourselves here because we're so damn stupid, we can go ahead, but they're just not going to let us blow the thing apart and have all these huge, you know, projectiles streaming out 360 all over the universe into other systems and causing havoc. So that we have free will. And in terms of other interference or help, they have given telepathic impulses that are received completely unconsciously, primarily by people in more benign sciences and medicine and things to help lead them a bit towards discoveries that are safe and appropriate time-wise, evolutionarily, for us to have and to make. The scientists who are thus impulsed know nothing about it whatsoever. They it's not like somebody says, now here comes a message. It's just they get an idea and they develop it and they think it's, you know, totally their own. But it isn't. And it doesn't, it's, you know, they'll never know, the ones who've had that help. And they obviously have to be people who are well capable of, you know, making discoveries on their own and taking an idea and developing it. But we got a little help here and there that way. But there, as far as contacts with people on the planet, there are people that babble on about being in contact with ETs and all sorts of nonsense, and naturally they can't prove it. They have zero proof. And the standards set for proof in the Meyer case are so high that it's no wonder there's no proof.
Now, the interesting thing about the Billy Meyer case is it has been so controversial from the beginning. He's, I think, is he the only person or one of the few who's taken such clear and so many photos of UFOs?
He's taken more clear daytime photos of up to 3 and 4 of these craft than anybody on the planet. He's the only person known, because he's the only genuine contactee, to have taken photos from within the craft, looking out their windows at 2 other UFOs above Switzerland. He's, you know, taken 8 films, daylight films that are incomparable, a video that's mind-blowing. He's recorded the sounds of the ships on 4 occasions, and he was also given metal alloy samples by the ETs, which were analyzed at IBM and found to be irreproducible. So in terms of physical evidence, and believe me, the skeptics have tried, they've just fallen on their faces for the past 8 years, they are completely incapable of penetrating the, by duplication or showing that the evidence is in any way, shape, or form falsified. So, you know, and the physical evidence is, in a sense, the least important part. I mean, it's fascinating. It's really, you know, great stuff, but it's the information in the case that will really endure and make a difference for us over the centuries.
No, I was looking through, I mean, this minefield of information out there that of Billy's teachings or passages he's passing on. But to me, what I really got, some of it was quite depressing because it was very, very tough, saying that if we don't change, this is what's going to happen.
Right.
And human nature would always go into denial and think, well, that, you know, we can avoid that. That won't happen.
Right.
But the overall message really does seem to be one of personal responsibility. And one thing I really liked was it seems to really send out the message of basically doing unto others as you would have them do unto you, as being such a basic premise that human beings should follow.
Sure. From the most selfish motivation, if we want to truly be selfish and get the best for ourselves, we adhere to that kind of golden rule idea. Exactly right. It is common sense. It's the way the universe works, and it also happens to be wonderful when we apply it. It's like the secret to life, because there's nobody giving us anything. There's no God in heaven dispensing favors to this one or that one, answering these prayers but not those prayers. We do this creation. Sure, there are laws of creation, the ways things work, and part of it is our thoughts determine our reality, especially our thoughts that lead to the various feelings and actions. So we create through how we think and what we feel and do, and when we extend a certain thing out, we get that in return, ultimately, in its own timing. It doesn't mean that good people don't have, quote-unquote, bad things happen to them, that we don't have challenges and rough things. Of course, that's how we grow, too. That's life, the struggle of life. But it is a very simple thing that people complicate. We create all sorts of laws and nonsense to handle life, when if we were paying attention to how life worked and simply, you know, developed in our societies and cultures an adherence, an encouragement to adhere to these universal truths because it's so good for us to do so, we would, you know, our development on this planet, we would be 10,000 years ahead of ourselves now. Guarantee you.
Now, you mentioned free will a lot. That can sometimes be a hard concept, at least for me to grasp, because obviously we have free will. We can choose to you know, go outside today or stay home and watch television. But as far as, you know, it seems like so many events in the world are beyond our control. We can contribute on a small level, but how far does the free will carry in our lives?
Well, yeah, I see your point and your question, because, of course, it's like I'm sitting here thinking all these good thoughts and doing this, and, you know, some idiot drives his car into the building or whatever it is. I had free will. How come my free will? Well, we have right now about 7.5 billion people on our highly overpopulated planet, which is the core problem we face, believe it or not, is overpopulation. And you can take any issue and you can see how it's related to overpopulation, or I could, you know, do that exercise. But to stick with your question here, well, how come, you know, well, we've got 7.5 billion people all generating thoughts and feelings and actions, the majority of which is done basically unconsciously, and meaning also not done with an understanding of how the law of cause and effect works, you know, in its simplest, most essential sense, that we're sending stuff out. Now, when you have masses of people with free will generating irrational or inconsiderate, violent, all sorts of thoughts, there is an energy created by that. And some of those energies are larger than other energies. You know, some of the negativity on this planet is currently larger than the positivity. And, you know, things can be set in motion, negative things can be set in motion that impact people who are, you know, moving along positively, or neutrally, even in their lives, and affect them negatively. Then that becomes, if we are surviving those experiences, those become our challenges. How do we exercise our thinking abilities? How do we exercise our will and determination to overcome this challenge? And thereby we're growing in an evolutionary sense. Because evolution is a really hugely long process, and everything is in the process of evolution. You know, there's smaller life forms that are evolving as well in different ways, not through consciousness, but human beings learn, it's true, through countless millions of lifetimes. Well, we're only right now getting the average, you know, 72, 76 years, whatever it is here, and there's so much to learn in any given lifetime, we couldn't learn it all in our short and shortened lifespans. So through the reincarnation process, we come in each successive time, we attract new lessons. Sometimes we attract some of the similar, you know, older ones, because there's certain universal experiences. And so positive and negative are part of the process of life, of growth, of evolution, and free will is still in there as well. It's just that it doesn't mean that at our level of development, most of us, the majority of people, are powerful enough creators thought-wise to, you know, overwhelmingly defeat, if you will, all negativity, and, you know, it just doesn't happen. So I don't know if that helps in the explanation, but there is a balance, and there is, you know, there are laws in operation, and we do have free will. We want to exercise it wisely.
So why is it that the Pleiadians or these beings were particularly interested in us? Why did they bother to come here and even study or try and help us?
Sure. Well, as I hinted at before, they claim that in many cases, not all, there were different players too, but in many cases, the gods of our past were their ancestors, their forefathers. And not all of them were peaceful, benevolent. Some of these gods played with human beings like as pawns because they could, and because even high spiritual development doesn't guarantee that that development and that power doesn't get misused. It can be. It does. Look, if we think of it this way, we today in our 21st century, we're far more advanced, knowledgeable than our, you know, ancestors of 200-300 years ago, let alone 60 years ago. But, you know, we're far more advanced than they are. We have all this technology at our disposal. Look, we're still in trouble. We're still making wars and doing crazy things.
Yeah, we're still just as savage.
We are very savage.
Yeah.
Now, their forefathers, in some cases, were high-tech savages too. And they had more spiritual knowledge. I mean, savage in the sense that they were very warlike. They would go and bring whole, you know, worlds under their dominion, in some cases destroying them and enslaving people. They had that in their lineage too. It's not like these fictitious little angels fluttering around that never did anything, you know, wrong, and they just happened to emerge as perfect beings. No, these are beings human beings through the course of evolution, going back millions of years, I might add. Their forefathers go back millions of years, but the ones who were more recent to the planet a few thousand years ago, some of them were the gods of these times, or, you know, people in their ancestral lineage or what have you, and they set in motion these things that have enslaved our thinking abilities, created cultic, mind-numbing religion, superstitions, rituals, beliefs that are irrational, that have polarized people over time, and so we have now these competing mega major religions at each other's throats, helping to, you know, bring more war and destruction and terrorism that is born out of these religions, and, you know, it goes on endlessly. So each time there were, though, also, of course, positive ETs trying to get information into our world through these prophets, some of the prophets that Meyer was, you know, in previous incarcerations, they call them. But these Playaran people of today have a self-obligated mission. They chose this for themselves with the permission of higher, you know, evolved beings as well to do it, to try to help us course correct. Because while their forefathers set this grief in motion, we still carry the blame for buying into all this garbage and not thinking our way through, not working our evolution consciously enough. Sure, we've been disadvantaged, but we're still responsible. So if they can get us to know that we're responsible and to know where to look and where to start, you know, making correction and coming, you know, slapping ourselves awake a bit, then they can fulfill the best thing they can do on a non-interference basis to help us, to help ourselves to evolve and become true human beings. And the good news in the whole deal is they say it's only going to take another mere 800 years before we have really come into our own as human beings, not
providing
the barbarians.
Providing we don't keep on the crash course we're on.
Well, we're going to have some losses, inevitably, and there will be survival. I mean, the way life will work and evolution, there, the seeds are around. Now they have preserved teachings. There will be people. I don't mean the worst of all has to happen, but when bad things occur, when we have losses, there will be people who are going to say, we're not going to go in that direction again. We simply are not going to do that. So there will be choices that will be made over the centuries where people, and especially the true leaders of the coming time, they claim are the women. They will be the ones who bring true peace to our world as they emerge in true feminine power, knowledge and wisdom, not an imitation of male power, and they will bring an end. Ultimately, they will be the ones that settle this thing down and the male, basically male-propelled violence and aggression and all that, along with some genetic engineering that will be done to help rectify that, it will be the women that will bring this level of spiritual consciousness-related evolution and development to our world. And it will look very different in centuries from now, but we have a long process because we are in the very early stages, in the seeds of a new time, and our seeds are in the middle of a lot of fertilizer.
Now, have in the prophecies, some of the prophecies Billy's had, because there are certain things going on in the world that, to me, I find absolutely horrifying, like the potential that we'll all very soon be chipped.
That's one of the big warnings that Meyer has. He says, you people are going to allow yourselves to do this unless you wake up. You're going to be enslaved worldwide.
So they have warned him about the chipping.
He's published that even a couple decades ago.
And what about, you mentioned genetically modified, because that's something that also I can see can go very, very wrong, creating these half-human, half-animal hybrids, creating very sort of robotic humans. Is that something they also have talked about?
Long ago, he's written about it. See, it's a double-edged sword. Strangely enough, I don't know if we'll have time to go into the other thing about the original genetic manipulations done to us, but they say the problem we have is, yes, genetic manipulations, the hybrid animal-human things, which Meyer published before those experiments were even starting, and we have it all documented, those things that will lead to some, you know, unpleasantness, but genetic engineering is a boon to humankind when properly applied. It will help to create the more nutritious, constituted foods. It can help us to to solve our illness problems and all. It isn't in and of itself an evil, bad thing to have genetic engineering. But like any science, anything, it's a double-edged sword. We have to monitor carefully. There, it will be abused. There is no question. Our history as humans shows, which is why they can't give us technology, that whenever technological developments, you know, arise, we have always this military mind looking to how to, can we apply this to kill more people instead of, you know, nurture life. So he has written extensively about all this stuff, what's coming. There will be chipping of human beings in ways that far exceed even the biochipping. There will be humans who in times to come will even allow the amputation of limbs and such so that nerve endings can be hooked up to chips and all. There are things, you can read this, it's on my website. He published this in 1995, foretelling a lot of what will come in the centuries to come with very advanced, strange and robotic beings and rebellions of robotic beings and things. And a lot of this has happened historically even before. We're kind of repeating some old history. Now people can say, well, that's all science fiction. I can say, well, you know, certainly can't prove that, but every, you know, every month there's another thing in the Meyer case that gets corroborated on his scientific information, on this stuff, and you have to go, there's a reason we're getting this, you know, somebody's trying to wake us up, but, you know, we're busy watching every irrelevant television show and sporting event and, you know, drinking ourselves into oblivion and all the rest and waving our fingers in the air going, we're number one as all of our jobs have been shipped overseas and all the rest of it by the people we've allowed to take power. How smart are we?
Now, have they mentioned, there's the big brouhaha about 2012. Have specifically given that as a significant date?
It's a date along with a number of others when there could be a world war, but this has gone back into the 90s even. Fortunately, there's been enough movement and consciousness in people to keep pushing back on this third world war thing. But as for the 2012 date, they said, we can tell you with certainty that it right after 2011 and right before 2013, 2012 will be here. And then there'll be 2014 and 15, and you people are again following these kooky, you know, if big date event. What happened was this Mayan calendar thing. I have an article on my website. The Mayans got wiped out through drought and famine and migration and the rest, and they didn't come about to do their next calendar. Apparently they'd done it up to then, and they didn't do the next one. Yes, of course, there are cosmic influences and astrological influences, and we're coming into this interesting time and all, but it's like, no, the world doesn't end in 2012. We don't have ascension. The earth doesn't go into the fourth density. The good people aren't harvested and all the rest of this new age garbage that gets floated out. And all the people that run into that escapism apparently are not paying attention to what's going on in the here and now and what we've got to do if we want to have a better here, now, and later. So 2012 is just another year in the calendar. It'll have its ups and downs, its unique things, its startling things. But we've got to get out of that, you know, looking to, well, I wonder what'll happen in 2012 thing. And I'm not putting you down for it. It's the real big issue, mainly in all this, you know, new age stuff. Everybody's blathering on about it and having ceremonies and this and that. And what's happening now? What are you letting pass by, human beings? What is, you know, running past your nose that you're not attending to? Are you monitoring your thoughts? Are you paying attention? And too many people aren't.
So the message really is to not keep looking outside for solutions and cures and miracles. It's that we need to really take hold of what we're doing right now in the world with our lives and act on our free will and create changes.
100%. You've got it. You've nailed it. And if that is a less exciting prospect to people because we're so addicted to excitement and novelty in our video games, but that is the answer. And if people, if we don't do this in significant enough numbers, we, all of us, will look back to today and even days before and years before and days to come, and we'll say, we were fools. We were just deluded, overly entertained fools. And in the 1958 letter on my website, Meyer talks about this time. He says there will come a time when people will be involved with phantasmagoria, with imaginary things and games and creating illusions and distractions, and they will so lose themselves they won't know reality. That's here. And they're working harder on it every day to make the next wonderfully distracting game.
Michael, tell us a bit about the film The Silent Revolution of Truth.
That is a 1.5-hour documentary which includes Meyer, family members, other witnesses, other photographers, a therapist who talks about delusional disorders, an NLP guy who talks about how to to detect if these people are being truthful. We show evidence. We Meyer gets to speak about many different things. I'm in there babbling away too. We have three special feature sections, including the extraterrestrial perspective on the origin of human life in this universe, with lots of information. We've got an interaction between me and a skeptic, and then we also have the first interstellar songwriting collaboration, the song "The Silent Revolution of Truth," that is in there as well. And that film is hopefully it's getting out there. People in 35 different countries have already gotten it just from my website.
So that's available on DVD. Your website is theyfly.com?
Theyfly.com, exactly.
Michael, I know we just have another minute or so, but
sure.
Do you see or are you in regular contact with Billy?
Well, I go over to Switzerland every year. I'll be there going over again this year. I am more in direct contact with some of the people around him that you know, see him on a regular basis. I've talked to him on the phone now and then and stuff, but it's like I get to visit with him when I'm there and talk to him. But, you know, the thing is, even if you spend an hour with somebody, if you want to learn a lot, you learn more from the hours of reading and delving that you can do. It's wonderful to spend time with him. He's just a very genuine, warm, direct man with no artifice about him, no sense of I'm a celebrity, special person. He's so genuine. It's very comfortable. It's just, and he's that way with every, I've seen him interacting, whether it's his family members or other people. He's just a genuine human being. He has his ups and downs, he has his emotions, but he is without artifice with people and without specialness. And I just am very, very honored to call him a friend.
Is he in good health? Because I think, what, is he in his 70s now?
He'll be 72 in a few weeks. His health goes up and down because he works so enormously hard, beyond what people could imagine, his work in terms of his writing, plus the other duties he has there. It is demanding for a person half his age with two arms, and he has, you know, just one. And I know this, the people around him. So he goes down, he gets sick, and goes out of commission sometimes for, you know, 4 days a week and what have you, and then he bounces back. But it takes its toll on him.
And is he still in contact with beings? Is he still receiving information?
Oh, sure.
And is there anything sort of like a new news flash that you've had from him?
Well, at this point, with the posting of the article, it's called A Prediction. I get other translations from people who are authorized to translate, and we post them on the site, and I link to another site where his contact reports are posted. I don't have anything like from, you know, if there was a contact 2 weeks ago or last week, mm-hmm. I don't have that, because it's harder to, you know, stay current on it. But the information, all the information we really need to know what this is about is freely available. You don't even have to spend a penny. People could really just delve into, as you say, there's so much extensive information on my site, delve into it, start thinking. Then, sure, there's books and there's films and things that can take you farther. But once we grasp what the very thing you emphasize, the self-responsibility, the doors open. I do teach a workshop that they've authorized me to teach that I created on what I call standing in spirit, which is a process for that kind of inner awareness and all. But there's many ways to do it.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for talking to us today. Your website, again, is theyfly.com, and the movie,
yes,
The Silent Revolution of Truth, can be bought on DVD from your website?
That's correct.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, and I hope we can talk again soon sometime.
Love to. There's so much to talk about, and we will do it again.
Good. You're absolutely a wealth of information, so thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, Emily. Thank you.